All right, buckle up, everyone, because today we're diving headfirst into the wild world of FIBA 3x3 basketball.
Ooh, yeah, we're going deep on this one.
We are going deep.
Straight into the rule book itself.
Yeah, so if you stick with us by the end, you're going to be like walking 3x3 encyclopedias.
That's right.
No.
No more casual fan.
No more casual fan after this.
You are an expert.
You're going to know the ins and outs, the nitty-gritty, all the stuff that makes this sport tick.
Absolutely.
Now, just in case you're new to the whole 3x3 thing, it's basically basketball on overdrive.
That's a good way to put it.
It's one hoop,
Super fast.
three players a side,
High intensity.
and substitute.
Yeah, and a whole lot of action packed into just 10 minutes of playing time.
Yeah, it's intense.
It's intense.
But here's where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
FIBA, the International Basketball Federation, they've created this whole system of regulations
Okay.
that govern everything
Everything.
from who can play
Right.
to how the tournaments are structured.
All the way up to the Olympics.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling, but in a good way.
Oh, yeah, it's fascinating stuff. And to really appreciate 3x3,
Yeah.
you got to understand these regulations, it's not just about the game itself.
Right.
It's about the global strategy, the whole system.
The whole ecosystem of it.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's break this down.
All right.
First up, FIBA has this tiered structure. For 3x3, we're talking official national team competitions,
Right.
pro circuits, endorsed events. It's like, think of it like a pyramid.
I like that.
Yeah.
A pyramid.
Okay, at the top,
Right at the top.
you've got your Olympics, your
Olympics.
FIBA 3x3 World Cups, the
Yes.
big leagues.
Absolutely.
Then, step below that.
You've got your kind of like continental championships,
Okay.
things like the Champions Cup, the Zone Cups, where teams are battling it out for regional dominance.
So like claiming bragging rights for your part of the world.
Exactly.
Okay, and these official competitions, this is where things like player eligibility get
Yeah.
super serious, right?
Oh, absolutely. FIBA, they're not messing around.
Yeah.
They have very strict nationality requirements
Okay.
to make sure it's a level playing field
Makes sense.
for everyone. So, for example, to represent your country in one of these major competitions, you need a passport
Okay.
issued before January 1st
Okay.
of the year before the competition.
Oh, wow.
So, let's say the World Cup is in 2026.
Okay.
You'd need a passport issued before January 1st, 2025.
So it's not just about like
It's not enough to just, yeah,
being a citizen.
to just show up and say, hey, I'm a citizen.
Yeah.
Like me play.
You gotta have that paperwork.
You gotta have the paperwork to prove it.
And it's gotta be dated. You can't just become a citizen and then immediately go play for that country.
Exactly. It's
Yeah.
there to prevent countries from
Oh.
stacking their teams with newly naturalized players.
Okay, to stop any shenanigans,
Yeah. To keep it fair.
keep it fair.
Keep it competitive. And also, generally,
Yeah.
you can't have played for another country's national team
Okay.
before, at least not in a main FIBA competition.
So you can't like bounce around from country to country.
Exactly. You gotta
You
commit.
gotta pick your team.
You gotta pick your team and stick with it.
Okay, that makes sense. But what about like,
Yeah.
what if a player has dual citizenship
Yeah.
or they moved countries when they were really young?
That's where things get a little bit more complicated.
Okay.
That's where the special cases rule comes in.
Oh, special cases.
It's like a waiver, a special permission slip
Okay.
from FIBA.
All right.
So the Secretary General of FIBA can actually allow exceptions,
Okay.
but there's a catch.
What's the cash?
It can cost the Federation
Oh.
up to 20,000 Swiss francs.
20,000 Swiss francs.
20,000 Swiss francs.
That's like,
That's a lot of cheese.
yeah, it's a lot of cheese. It's like a transfer fee.
It is. It's like they're buying a player.
Yeah, like in professional soccer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really shows you how seriously
Yeah.
FIBA takes these matters.
Yeah.
They want to make sure it's fair. They want to prevent players from just being like poached
Just for being good, like,
just because they're talented.
yeah. Oh, you're good. Come play for us.
We'll pay anything.
They'll give you a Swiss bank account.
Exactly. Yeah. So they put these rules in place
Yeah.
to keep it balanced.
Keep it balanced. Keep it fair.
Keep it competitive.
Okay, so that's the tippy top of the pyramid.
That's the top.
What about like the pro circuit?
Ah, the pro circuit. Now we're talking.
Yeah.
This is where the individual teams,
Okay.
not countries, are battling it out.
All right, so it's like team versus
Yeah,
team.
we're talking big money prizes,
Yeah, okay.
intense rivalries. You got the World Tour,
Okay.
you got the Challengers, And then you have the women's series.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a whole different level.
It's like the NBA of 3x3 basketball.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good way to think about it.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting is that FIBA themselves,
yeah,
they pay out the prize money directly to the teams.
Not the tournament organizers.
Not the tournament organizers.
That's interesting.
It's like they're directly invested.
Yeah, like they're cutting out the middleman.
Cutting out the middleman, yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
And it's a way for them to control the quality,
right,
and ensure the global reach of the sport at that highest level.
Makes sense. They want to keep a tight rein on things.
Yeah, they want to make sure it's done right.
Okay. And then at the bottom of our pyramid.
Right at the base.
You have the FIBA-endorsed events.
This is where it all starts.
Okay.
This is your local, your regional tournaments.
Right.
They're still connected to the global 3x3 network.
Okay.
But they have a bit more flexibility in terms of the rules and who can participate.
So it's a little bit more like loosey-goosey.
Yeah, a little bit more relaxed.
Yeah.
Think of them like the minor leagues.
Okay.
Where players can develop their skills.
Okay.
Earn ranking points.
Okay.
And maybe even qualify for a challenger event.
So it's like a pathway.
It's a pathway.
In the big leagues.
Exactly.
You got to start somewhere. Yeah, pay your dues.
Exactly. And for fans, it's a great opportunity to see the excitement of 3x3 at a local level.
Yeah, in your community.
Right, in their own community.
All right, now you mentioned ranking points.
Yes.
Let's talk about how those work, because we've got...
Seems a little complicated.
Yeah, individual rankings, we've got federation rankings.
Team rankings.
It sounds a little messy.
It can be, but it's actually, once you break it down,
okay,
it's quite logical.
Okay, break it down for me.
So the FIBA 3x3 individual world ranking,
okay,
that's based on the points that players earn at different FIBA competitions.
Makes sense.
Including those endorsed events we just talked about.
So the more you play.
The more you play.
The better you do.
And the better you perform.
The higher you climb.
The higher you climb in the rankings.
Okay.
And these rankings are updated daily.
Wow. So it's constantly shifting.
It's constantly shifting.
Okay.
Yeah. Adds to the excitement.
It does. Yeah. You're always checking.
You're always checking.
Okay.
Now, the FIBA 3x3 federation ranking.
Okay.
That uses the individual rankings.
Okay.
To actually rank whole countries.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's based on the combined points.
Okay.
Of a country's top 20 players.
So it's like the best of the best.
The best of the best.
Okay.
From each country.
Are then used to rank that country.
Exactly. So a country's success.
Yeah.
Is directly tied.
Okay.
To how well its players perform.
Okay, so it's not just about...
It's a team effort.
Yeah, it's a team effort. It's not just about, like,
yeah,
one superstar carrying the whole country.
Exactly. It's about developing a deep pool of talent.
Right, right. And these rankings actually matter, right?
They matter a lot.
It's not just like...
But they determine things.
Yeah.
Like seeding in national team competitions.
And it's...
And how many spots a country gets for the World Cup and the Champions Cup.
Oh, wow.
So... Yeah, it's a big deal.
So it's a big deal for countries to have a high federation ranking.
Yeah.
It's bragging rights.
It's bragging rights, but it's also...
But it's also...
And about opportunity.
Yeah. Okay, and then we've also got the FIBA 3x3 team ranking.
Yes, this one is specifically for the pro circuit.
Okay, so this is where the pros come in.
This is where the pros come in.
Okay.
And it's based on how well teams...
Mm-hmm.
Specifically validated teams, which we'll get into later.
Okay.
Perform in events like the World Tour and the Challenger.
So it's all about like...
It's all about tracking team performance.
Yeah.
And creating a competitive landscape for the pros.
For the pros. All right. So we've got our individual rankings to see who the best players in the world are.
Exactly.
We've got our federation rankings to see which countries are dominating.
Right.
And we've got our team rankings to see which pro teams are at the top of their game.
You got it.
Okay, and all this might sound, I mean, it is kind of complicated, but it's
all comes together.
It all comes together to create, like...
To create a fair.
A fair and competitive environment for 3x3 basketball to flourish.
That's the goal.
That's the goal.
That's why these regulations are so important.
Okay, now let's zoom in on these national team competitions.
Because
this is where things get really interesting.
Yeah.
Remember those nationality rules we mentioned earlier?
Oh, yeah. Those are key.
Yeah, so to play for your country in the senior...
In the open category.
The open category of an official FIBA 3x3 competition.
Yeah.
Things get strict.
Things get pretty specific.
Yeah, it's not, so it's not as simple.
It's not just about having a passport.
Flashing your passport, being like, yo, I'm here.
I'm ready to play.
Yeah, yeah.
It's more than that.
Walk us through it.
So imagine you're a talented young player.
Okay.
And you've got dual citizenship, let's say. You're American and French.
Okay.
You're living in the U.S. You're playing high school basketball. You're doing your thing.
All right.
But you dream of representing France.
Oh, Lala.
On the international stage.
Okay.
So what do you need to do?
Yeah, what does this player have to do?
To be eligible to play for France.
Yeah.
First,
yeah.
They need to make sure they have a French passport
uh-huh.
issued before that cutoff date.
Okay.
For the competition they want to play in.
Okay.
And remember, that's January 1st.
Yeah.
Of the year before the competition.
Right. Okay.
So if they don't have that.
Then what?
Then they might need to explore that special cases rule.
Oh, okay.
And hope that France is willing to pay the fee.
The big bucks.
The big bucks.
Okay.
And of course,
yeah.
They can't have played for the U.S. national team before.
Right. You got to pick one.
You got to pick one.
You can't just be like, oh, I'll play for this country this year, this country next year.
You got to choose.
Choose your allegiance.
You got to choose.
Okay. And then let's say they choose France.
Okay, they choose.
They get their passport sorted.
They get the paperwork.
They haven't played for the U.S.
Right.
What's next?
Well, then they might start playing in local 3x3 tournaments in France.
Oh, okay.
You know, working their way up.
Yeah, working their way up the ranks.
Maybe they get noticed.
Okay.
They make the French national team.
Oh, wow.
And then maybe they get to compete in the Zone Cup.
So it's really like a journey.
It's a journey.
Yeah.
And these rules kind of shape that journey.
Every step of the way. Yeah, they're not just like,
it's not just about showing up and playing.
Yeah.
It's about the whole system.
It's about navigating the system.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It adds a layer of strategy.
Okay.
And complexity to the game.
I like it.
Both for the players.
Yeah.
And for the federations.
All right. So we're already starting to see how these rules create like
this intricate web
of pathways and possibilities for players.
It's like a choose your own adventure story.
It is.
In the world of 3x3 basketball.
Yeah, but let's shift gears a bit and talk about the actual gameplay and tournament structures.
Right.
We know 3x3 it's fast-paced.
That's super fast.
Intense.
Yeah.
But are there like specific rules around how the games are scheduled?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So FIBA, they don't just want exciting games.
Right.
They want a sustainable sport.
Okay.
That prioritizes player well-being.
Player well-being.
So they actually have regulations built right into the rule book about the number of games a team can play.
Okay.
And the rest time they need.
So it's not just about like,
it's not about cramming.
Cramming as many games as possible.
As many games as possible.
Yeah, to a tournament.
Yeah, no, it's more strategic than that.
More strategic.
So generally,
yeah.
A team can play a maximum of 4 games per day.
Okay.
And they need at least a 1-game break between matches.
Okay.
Plus they're guaranteed at least 14 hours of rest.
Okay.
Between games on different days.
Wow.
So you can't just be playing, you know,
back to back to back.
Back to back all day long.
And they're really taking player health into consideration.
Absolutely. Player welfare is a top priority.
That makes a lot of sense. You can't expect peak performance
on
athletes if they're just getting run ragged.
You gotta give them time to recover.
Yeah.
To refuel. Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
And these considerations,
yeah.
they extend to the structure of the tournaments themselves. Oh. So for instance, any tournament with more than 3 pool games in the main draw needs to have at least 1 rest day built in.
So it's not just about the individual game intake.
It's about the overall load throughout the tournament.
Okay. So they're thinking long-term.
It's a long-term strategy.
Player health, long-term.
Exactly.
Right.
And it's not just the players they think about.
Oh.
They also factor in things like TV audiences.
Okay.
Public attendance.
Right. They want to make sure people can actually watch the games.
Exactly. And even gender equality.
Wait, gender equality in scheduling.
In scheduling, yeah.
Tell me more about that.
So in national team competitions, they try to schedule women's games.
Okay.
Before men's games.
Oh, okay.
To give both genders
yeah.
equal visibility.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and in pro circuit events, they often schedule games in blocks of 4 with all the men's games in one block.
Okay.
And all the women's games in another.
Oh, that's really clever.
So that fans
yeah.
can easily follow their preferred gender
yeah.
without having to jump back and forth.
And that makes a lot of sense.
It creates a better flow.
Yeah.
For viewers at home and spectators in the arena.
All right, now let's talk about that iconic Infinity logo we see everywhere.
Oh yeah, the Infinity.
The 3x3 world.
Everywhere.
Yeah, I know we touched on it before.
Yeah.
But what's the story with like the regulations around it?
So it all comes down to branding.
Okay.
And trademarks.
Okay.
That Infinity logo.
Yeah.
Is a registered trademark of FIBA.
Uh-huh.
And they have a global partner.
Okay.
That exclusively manufactures jerseys featuring the logo.
So if you're playing in like a major FIBA competition.
A major FIBA competition.
You are rocking that specific jersey.
That specific jersey.
No exceptions.
No exceptions.
No, right.
It's all about brand consistency and really helps to solidify the visual identity of FIBA 3x3. On a global scale.
All the NBA teams wear Nike now.
Exactly. It's the same idea.
Okay.
So yeah, when you see that Infinity logo,
yeah,
you know it's official.
You know it's official.
You know it's FIBA 3x3.
Okay, so what about like endorsed events?
Endorsed events, it's a bit more flexible.
Okay.
They can definitely use the Infinity logo in their promotional materials.
Okay.
But players aren't strictly required to wear jerseys with the logo.
So they allow a little more.
Yeah, a little more freedom.
Yeah,
freedom. But at the grassroots level.
Okay.
But they still maintain that control.
Over the official branding.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. For major competitions.
Smart, smart.
It's a smart strategy.
All right. Now, this one might surprise you.
Okay, hit me.
FIBA also has regulations about the equipment used in official competitions.
Really?
Yeah.
So we're not just talking jerseys.
Yeah. We're not just talking jerseys.
We're talking ballers.
The whole nine yards.
The whole nine yards.
Really?
Yeah. So we're talking World Cups, Zone Cups, the Champions Cup.
Okay.
All these events.
Okay.
FIBA has specific standards.
Okay.
To make sure it's a level playing field and a high quality playing experience.
Yeah. So you can't just bring your...
You can't just bring your old basketball...
From the garage.
Yeah, your beat up basketball.
No, no, no. These balls are specifically designed for outdoor play.
Okay.
They meet FIBA regulations for size.
Okay.
Weight, bounce.
So it's all very specific?
Very specific.
Yeah.
And the hoops
got
to be regulation size
with
breakaway rings for safety.
Of course, yeah. You don't want anyone...
You don't want anyone getting hurt.
Yeah, getting a finger stuck.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the court surface
needs
to be flat, level, safe for players to move on.
FIBA prefers hard courts for official events.
Wrong.
But synthetic surfaces are allowed, too.
So there's some flexibility.
There's some flexibility depending on the venue.
Yeah.
But the focus is on player safety.
Right.
And consistent playing conditions.
Okay. So it's all about standardizing things as much as possible.
Exactly. Make it fair. Make it safe.
Fair and safe.
Yeah.
All right. And then...
And for some events like the World Cups, FIBA actually provides the equipment themselves.
Really?
They ship it all over the world.
Wow. They're not messing around.
They're serious about it.
They're serious.
Yeah. They want to create a standardized, high quality environment for these major tournaments.
They're really invested in creating this professional and unified
global platform
for 3x3.
It's impressive.
It is impressive.
Yeah, and it's paying off. I mean, look how much 3x3 has grown in recent years. I mean, it's an Olympic sport now.
Yeah, it's huge.
It's huge. And these regulations, as intricate as they may seem, they've played a big role in that success.
They're
the foundation.
The foundation.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here.
We have.
We've looked at the structure of the competitions,
explored
those rules around player eligibility, even delved into those specific regulations about the Infinity logo, the equipment.
All the important stuff.
And what I'm starting to understand is that these regulations, they're not just arbitrary rules.
No, they're not just like random things they came up with.
Yeah, they're not just like, oh, let's make this rule up.
Exactly.
There's strategic decisions.
They're strategic.
Designed to shape the development and growth of 3x3 basketball.
That's a great way to put it, yeah.
Yeah.
It's all about shaping the game.
Shaping the game, okay.
And these decisions impact everyone.
Yeah. Players, teams, federations, fans,
It's like this
intricate
ecosystem where all these elements interact with each other.
Absolutely.
It's fascinating.
And we've only just scratched the surface.
Oh, I know. And speaking of scratching the surface, I think it's time for us to take a little break.
Okay.
When we come back, we'll explore how these regulations are actually playing out in the real world.
Let's do it.
And what they mean for the future of 3x3 basketball.
The future is bright.
Don't go anywhere.
We'll be right back.
Okay, so I'm starting to see how these regulations like create this whole like choose your own adventure.
Yeah, yeah.
For players in the 3x3 world, it's pretty cool. But
it is.
Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about like the actual gameplay and tournament structure.
Yeah.
So we know 3x3 is like super fast paced, intense, but
yeah.
Are there like specific rules around how the games are scheduled?
Oh, absolutely. FIBA doesn't just want exciting games.
Right.
They want a sustainable sport.
Okay.
That prioritizes player well-being.
Okay. So it's not just about like...
It's not just about
cramming
shoving as many games
as possible
into a tournament.
Exactly. Uh-huh. So generally, a team can play a maximum of 4 games per day.
Okay.
And they need at least a 1-game break between matches.
Okay.
Plus, they're guaranteed at least 14 hours of rest.
Wow.
Between games on different days.
Okay.
So you can't just be playing back to back to back.
They're really taking player health into consideration.
Absolutely. Player welfare is a top priority.
Makes a lot of sense.
You got to give them time to recover, refuel.
Recharge.
Exactly.
Okay.
And these considerations extend to the structure of the tournaments themselves.
Okay.
So, for instance, any tournament with more than 3 pool games in the main draw needs to have at least 1 rest day built in.
Okay. So it's not just about... Like,
it's not just about individual game intensity.
Right. It's about like the overall load. It's about the overall load on the players throughout the entire tournament.
Right. They're thinking long term.
It's a long term strategy.
Player health, long term.
Exactly.
Okay, that's good.
And it's not just the players they think about.
Oh.
They also factor in things like, you know, TV audiences.
Right, because they want to make sure that like...
Can keep the fans happy.
Yeah, people can actually watch the games.
Public attendance.
Yeah.
And even gender equality.
Yeah. Gender equality and scheduling.
In scheduling, yeah.
Tell me more about that.
So in national team competitions, they try to schedule the women's games
before
the men's games.
Okay.
To give both genders equal visibility.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. And in pro circuit events, they often schedule games in blocks of 4.
Okay.
With all the men's games in one block and all the women's games in another.
So fans can just watch.
Yeah. They can just
want to watch.
Follow their preferred gender.
Yeah.
Without having to like jump back and forth.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's really clever. I like that.
Creates a better flow for viewers at home and spectators in the arena.
Okay. Now I want to talk about that iconic Infinity logo.
Oh, yeah.
We see everywhere in the 3x3 world.
The Infinity logo. It's everywhere.
I know we touched on it before.
Yeah.
But what's like the story, like the regulations surrounding that logo?
So it all comes down to branding and trademarks.
Okay. Yeah.
That Infinity logo is a registered trademark of FIBA.
Right.
And they have a global partner that exclusively manufactures jerseys.
Okay.
Featuring that logo.
So if you're playing like a major FIBA competition.
You're wearing that jersey, no exceptions.
That specific jersey.
That's it. It's all about brand consistency.
Right.
You know, solidifying that visual identity
of
FIBA 3x3 on a global scale.
Right. It's like how all the NBA teams wear Nike now.
Exactly. Same idea.
Okay.
So when you see that Infinity logo, you know it's official.
You know it's legit.
You know it's FIBA 3x3.
Okay, so what about like endorsed events?
For endorsed events, it's a bit more flexible.
Okay.
They can definitely use the Infinity logo.
Okay.
In their promotional materials.
Right.
But players aren't strictly required to wear jerseys with the logo.
So they allow for a little bit more freedom.
A little more freedom at the grassroots level.
Yeah, okay.
But they still maintain control over that official branding.
Right, for the major competitions.
Exactly.
Smart
strategy.
Now this one might surprise you.
Who? Okay.
FIBA also has regulations about the equipment used in official competitions.
Like what kind of equipment are we talking about?
We're talking balls, hoops, the whole 9 yards.
Wow.
So we're talking like World Cups, Zone Cups, Champions Cup, all these events.
Okay.
FIBA has specific standards to make sure it's a level playing field.
Okay.
And a high quality playing experience.
That makes sense.
So you can't just bring your old basketball from the garage.
No, no, no.
Your beat up basketball.
Nope.
These balls are specifically designed.
They're designed for outdoor play.
Okay.
They meet FIBA regulations for size, weight, bounce.
So it's very specific.
Very specific.
Okay.
And the hoops.
Uh-huh.
Got to be regulation size with breakaway rims.
For safety.
For safety, yeah. You don't want anybody getting hurt.
Yeah, getting their fingers stuck.
Exactly.
Okay, what about the court?
The court surface needs to be flat, level, safe for players to move on.
Okay.
FIBA prefers hard courts for official events.
Okay.
But synthetic surfaces are allowed too.
So there's some flexibility.
There's some flexibility depending on the venue.
Depending on the venue.
Yeah.
But the focus is on player safety and just making sure that.
Yeah. Consistent playing conditions.
Yeah. It's all standardized.
Exactly.
Okay. So it's about standardizing things.
Making it fair, making it safe.
Fair and safe.
Yeah.
And for some events, like the World Cups, FIBA actually provides the equipment themselves.
Really? They ship it all over the world?
They ship it all over the world. They're serious about this.
Wow. That's commitment.
They're serious about creating a standardized, high-quality environment for these tournaments.
That's impressive.
It really shows their investment in this global platform.
A global platform for 3x3, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable, and it's paying off.
Oh, it's definitely paying off.
Look how much 3x3 has grown.
It's exploding in popularity.
It's an Olympic sport now.
Olympic sport. It's huge.
It's huge, and these regulations,
yeah,
as intricate as they may seem,
they've played a big role in that success.
They're like the foundation.
A foundation.
This whole thing.
Yeah, they're essential.
Okay, so we've looked at the structure of the competitions,
huh?
Explored the rules around player eligibility.
Yes.
Delved into the specific regulations about the Infinity logo and equipment.
All the important stuff.
What I'm starting to understand is that these regulations, they're not just like, you know,
they're not just random rules.
Random arbitrary rules.
Yeah, they're not just making this stuff up.
They're strategic decisions.
They're strategic.
Designed to shape the development and growth of 3x3 basketball.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
It's about shaping the game.
Shaping the game. Okay.
And those decisions, they impact everyone.
Players, teams, fans, everybody.
Federations, and everybody.
It's like this really intricate ecosystem where all these elements are interacting.
It's a complex web.
Yeah.
But it works.
It's fascinating. And we've only just scratched the surface.
Oh, yeah. There's so much more to explore.
There's so much more. So let's keep going with this, shall we?
Let's do it.
We're back. And I feel like we've been like spelunking through this rule book.
Yeah, it's a deep dive for sure.
It's a deep dive.
But, you know, it's fascinating stuff.
It is fascinating. It's like, it's more than just rules. It's like,
it's a blueprint.
It's a blueprint for how this sport,
you know, it's structured, how it grows.
Grows and develops, yeah.
And ultimately, how it thrives.
Okay, so let's bring it all home.
Okay.
How are these regulations actually impacting things like team strategies, player development, like the big picture stuff?
The big picture. So let's start with team strategy.
Okay.
In the pro circuit, those rules about confirmed players and extended rosters, they're forcing teams to think long term.
Okay.
They can't just assemble a team for one tournament.
Right.
They have to build a core group of players
who
can compete consistently.
Yeah, it's like building a dynasty.
Exactly. You need that solid foundation of talent and chemistry.
Yeah, yeah.
And having that extended roster gives teams flexibility.
Okay.
You know, what if there's an injury?
Right.
What if a player's stuck overseas?
Yeah, you got to have options.
You got to have options. And remember, players can switch teams before they become confirmed.
Right.
So there's this whole element of like player recruitment, team building that happens.
Like a chess match.
It is. It's like a chess match.
Yeah.
With teams trying to like
outmaneuver each other.
Yeah. To build the strongest possible roster.
And this strategic thinking, it's not just limited to the pro circuit.
No, not at all.
Right.
National federations, they have to be savvy too.
Yeah.
When they're selecting their teams for international competitions.
Right. Because of those nationality rules.
Exactly. Those nationality and passport rules.
Yeah.
They really come into play.
Like that example we talked about before
with
the player who has dual citizenship federations,
they
got to be on top of those deadlines.
Absolutely.
Those requirements.
And sometimes they even have to make those tough decisions about whether or not to pursue that special case authorization.
Right.
And then, for a key player.
20,000 Swiss francs.
Yeah. That's not small change.
No.
It shows you how much value
federations
place on having the right players.
Right. It's a high stakes game.
It is.
On and off the court.
Absolutely.
Now, we've talked a lot about competition.
Yeah.
But what about the players themselves?
The players, yeah.
How are these regulations impacting their, like, development?
Yeah, their well-being.
Their well-being.
That's where those scheduling regulations come in.
Okay.
Those limits on games per day.
Yeah.
The mandatory rest periods.
Uh-huh.
It's all about protecting players.
Okay.
From burnout and injury.
Right. They're not just trying to...
They're thinking long-term.
Yeah.
They want exciting games.
Right.
But they want healthy athletes.
So it's a more sustainable approach to the sport.
Exactly. It's about sustainability. And
yeah.
It creates a more level playing field.
Right. Because everybody is playing...
Everybody's playing by the same rules.
By the same rules.
So no one has an unfair advantage.
Right.
And let's not forget about the fans.
Yeah, the fans are important.
The fans are a huge part of this.
Right.
You know, knowing about these regulations,
mm-hmm.
It helps us appreciate the game even more.
Right. Like you see these players out there and you're like, wow, they're
incredible athletes.
Incredible. Yeah. And they're playing all these games, but you understand that there's rules in place.
There's a system to protect them.
To protect them so they can keep performing at their best.
Right. So it's not just about like.
It's not about exploitation.
Yeah. It's not just about pushing them to their limit.
It's about creating an environment.
Yeah.
Where they can thrive.
And where the sport can thrive.
Exactly.
Okay, so all of these regulations.
Yeah.
The player eligibility, the scheduling, the equipment, the branding, like.
It all ties together.
It all comes together.
Yeah.
To grow this sport.
It contributes to the professionalism.
Yeah.
And the growth of the sport.
And we talked about how using standardized equipment.
Yeah.
Like those FIBA approved balls, the hoops.
Uh-huh.
Ensures consistency.
Consistency across all levels.
Yeah, whether you're watching the pros on TV.
Or playing with your friends at the park. Yeah, you know, it's being played the same way.
Under the same set of standards.
Yeah, I like that. And the Infinity logo.
Yeah, that iconic logo.
It's more than just a cool design.
It's a symbol.
It represents.
The global reach.
Yeah.
The unified identity.
Of FIBA 3x3 basketball.
It's instantly recognizable.
It is, yeah.
And it represents quality. Excitement, athleticism.
It's a good logo.
It's a great logo.
Okay, so where do we go from here?
The future of 3x3.
The future?
I think we're just seeing the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, this is an Olympic sport now.
Right.
The popularity is going to keep exploding.
Yeah, more investment, more media coverage.
More opportunities for players at all levels.
It's an exciting time to be a fan of 3x3 basketball.
It is. It's a great time to be involved.
Yeah.
And all these regulations we've talked about, they're not just rules.
Right.
They're the building blocks of that future.
They're shaping what 3x3 is going to become.
Exactly. They're creating a framework for sustainable growth and ensuring that 3x3 stays dynamic, competitive, globally accessible.
So the next time you see a 3x3 game, remember there's a whole system at work.
There's a lot going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. It's more than just what you see on the court.
Exactly. And maybe you'll even be inspired to dive into the rule book yourself.
That's right. There's always more to learn.
Always more to discover.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the world of FIBA 3x3 basketball.
It's been a pleasure. Until next time.